Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run down the field and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch!
Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
That's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
Adam Luckett, we made it. Football season, it's here. It's game week. We did it.
Finally. Finally here. Oh. Feels almost surreal.
On one hand, I wanted to do like some sort of big introduction, but like, I'm kind of like how Terry Wilson was talking tonight. I'm just ready to play. Like, let's just.
The nervous energy has definitely gotten to me a little bit. Where I'm just like, it's only Monday, it's only Tuesday, thinking about how this game's going to break down.
Thank God it's a nooner.
In different ways.
Like, if we had to, I know we were really bummed that it got the noon slate initially, but like, I don't think our nerves could handle that. Like, we're going to be up at 8 a.m. Saturday morning, just like sweat, ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be awesome. So hopefully we can help you get through the waiting part, because as Tom Petty told us, the wait is the hardest part. This is 11 personnel. I'm Nick Rouch. He's Adam Luckett. And we're going to spend a lot of time talking about the Auburn Tigers today. I feel like we did a pretty good job, Luckett, of like kind of pacing ourselves with the Auburn talk, although we have been beating this drum ever since we went live after the SEC released their schedule back in, was it July or August? It feels like
late
forever
July.
Ago.
It was like, but the last Friday in July, I think.
Yeah, so we made it. We're finally here. We get to talk about Auburn, but first, Luckett, we got to say I told you so to a couple folks out there, because it really felt good to say I told you so to all those haters and losers who actually like the Louisville Cardinals.
A lot of Louisville people got a taste of some sour medicine with the O not lining up correctly after years and years of making that joke 10 trillion times.
Well,
they had two busts, and now – The story kind of nationally about Satterfield is, like, defensively, they're not coached very well. They're not lined up correctly. They've had these busts. They've had every good team they've played has put a crooked number on them, has ran for umpteen yards. And now it's kind of like, whoa, like, is there like some mummy to him? Is it, you know, are we going to score a lot of points? But, you know, we're going to give up 35, so we're going to win a shootout. Now, that's not what he was at App State, but that's kind of what they're at right now. Now, they still need to get some players in there. But that identity they're building of every good team we play, that really good team, I mean, that has a talent advantage, like a step up talent-wise. Every time they play somebody like that, they get a crooked number put on them. I mean, it's happened a bunch of times. They've even won games where they allow 50, like that Wake Forest comeback last year we watched up in the press box. That was crazy. And even Syracuse put a big number on them, but they scored like 68 points, so it didn't matter. But there is that developing, I think. That was the biggest, I think, thing to take from that game.
Yeah, and there was a great thread that Richard Johnson put out there. And if you don't know Richard Johnson, he he still might be with SB Nation, but he's going to be on the SEC Network's Thinking Out Loud show, which was formerly Marcus Spears and Greg McElroy. He'll be on there with Spencer Hall and Brandon Boykin next Monday to talk about all the action. And Richard Johnson's he's kind of like a scheme nerd, if you will. But really, it was, as he put it pretty plainly, it was just like, here's a running, just like all of the big plays Miami had, and they were all to the boundary side of the field. So when lined up on the hash, they were just overcompensating for all of the open space in the field, and nobody was there. And my favorite play was that long run, because Louisville was just in man, and they just motioned somebody away from the boundary, and there was nobody there except a linebacker. And, I mean, all you had to do is get to the edge, and they were gone. And that happened multiple times. And I think my favorite part of it all is that your man Bruce Feldman really drank the Brian Brown Kool-Aid and already had Louisville's defensive coordinator as a candidate for Southern Miss's head coaching vacancy. It's like, you mean that guy is supposed to be a head coach? Like, those are like, when you're blowing assignments that badly, like it's kind of coaching.
I think Miami watched the Kentucky tape from last year. Because if you remember what Kentucky did, a lot of it was overloading and running to the nub side, is what they would call it, or the boundary.
Yep.
And you get kind of a numbers advantage there. And you get one reach block. And then the one time on that one, the defensive end stunts inside. And then the safety kind of gets caught up mm-hmm. in the wash. And
there's nobody there.
It's an easy score. And then the second time, the safety just had bad eyes. The guy just, you know, ran right through. They ran the little wheel route or whatever, running mm-hmm. back out of the backfield. Those are just things that they haven't got fixed. Like, that's kind of what they are. They have these busts on defense, and you can get them for them if you call it right.
And offensively, how I called them frauds last week because they're all big play. And you saw them struggle when they couldn't just be one big player after another. Now, mm-hmm. I got to give Javion Hawkins.
He's a stud. The dude's a stud. He's awesome. He's
good because their offensive line sucks. Like, Mangus was trying to get into an argument with me over Twitter. He was like, are you drunk? It's like, no, your offensive line is getting pushed back, but they're just running outside zone. So, like, if you just get a body on somebody, you don't have to push them down the field. The line of scrimmage was moving backwards, but Hawkins is so good, he just finds the little gap and shoots forward for 8 yards.
Like that touchdown run on their first drive, where it's outside zone right, he just kind of does a spin, cuts it back, and then scores on the backside. Gone. That's just instincts. And we saw it against Kentucky on that draw. He scored on a touchdown before half. Kentucky had it defended pretty well. He just makes one great cut, and then he's gone. He's just really good. And he's the motor to everything. Cunningham and Atwell make all the big plays, but he's right. The guy that sets it all up and kind of gets them the opportunities to really be successful because he provides that efficiency that they need.
I do think it's probably wise if Malik goes back to McHale, though. Like, dude, Malik's just not working for you, buddy. Like, mm-hmm. you know, McHale, you became a starter as McHale Cunningham, but Malik's getting his ass kicked on College Game Day. So, you know, just – maybe consider that.
Do you ever remember a player changing their name like that many times?
Puma Pass.
Yeah, that's the other one. You're right.
Louisville, you got to have three quarterbacks if you're going to be a quarterback at Louisville. Evan Conley is going to change his name to Devin Conley next. So just to keep us on our toes. But I thoroughly enjoyed that ass whooping. I kind of wanted it to be closer because the slate Saturday, it wasn't great. The noon time slot actually gave us a few nice surprises. Louisiana and Georgia State, you kind of warned us, like, hey, Louisiana, like, this is a tough spot. You get a big win, you got to go on the road to kind of a tough Georgia State team. And that they ended up having to pull that one out in overtime. So there was a couple good games sprinkled in there. But for the most part, the week – I guess it's week three last week. It wasn't the most competitive football that we're going to watch this season.
Well, it was just really thin after the noon slate. And it's kind of the same this week, which we'll get into later. Navy had that comeback against Tulane, which was kind of incredible.
Yeah.
Navy going to Navy.
Triple option, too. Like, of all of the offenses to overcome a 24-0 deficit, triple option probably lies on that pecking order.
We had another Syracuse snooze fest. If you're wanting to take a nap on Saturday afternoons, find Syracuse because they are providing that missing Big Ten football right now. If you want to see some sloppy, ugly football, find Syracuse at noon.
Find Syracuse playing Pitt, too. Like, right. You want to talk – I mean, that's Syracuse two Big Ten schools.
Somehow found a way to cover a spread by getting 40% of their offense on one play. And, of course, they score their only touchdown of the day on that one play. Pitt misses three field goals, had like six or seven possessions inside the 40, can only come away with 20 points or whatever they ended up with. Just disgusting, Pat Narduzzi. Just absolutely disgusting.
Oh, but man.
That's my takeaway. Syracuse, if you're trying to go to sleep, put the orange on. 3:30 slate, like you said, it was pretty thin. You had App State Marshall on CBS.
Which was, okay, first off, it was weird to have, like, the big SEC on CBS music and you're in Huntington, West Virginia. Like, it just, I don't know. Like, it was kind of like you're doing, like, a blind taste test and somebody tells you that this is Coke, but it's definitely, like,
RC Cola.
Yeah, like, it's not even Pepsi. Like, you're like, this is off. But, hey, credit to Marshall. They made two crazy good plays at the end of the game to upset App State. One, Appalachian State, like, I think it was their tight end, was just running away towards the end zone, gets the ball poked free, fumbles it. And did they block a field goal or was there an interception? There was one other play late that kind of when App State was making a run that Marshall did that I was like, oh, good job, Marshall. You go, Glenn Coco.
Then UCF handling their business at Georgia Tech.
Yeah, that score was deceiving too because they really ran it up towards the end of the third quarter.
It got out of hand because Georgia Tech was kind of in we have to go for it mode and they got stopped on the wrong side of the 50 a couple times. And Georgia Tech had some red zone turnovers. So that's becoming a thing for them. And another block field goal. But they just UCF looked good. Dylan Gabriel looks really good at quarterback.
So
and that was kind of the big 3:30 game.
I saw Mackenzie Milton on the sideline. Is he
supposed to be able to come back? No, he's supposed to be able to come back at some point this year. But I don't think you can play him over that kid they got right now.
Right.
That kid's really good.
And the way that, I mean, my understanding is that it wasn't Alex Smith bad, but like maybe Teddy Bridgewater bad.
It was bad.
It happened towards the end of the year. So like I can't see him being back in less than a year. So, you know, I don't know. It was just.
It'll be two years.
It'll be 2 years?
Come November. At Thanksgiving.
Poor kid. And, like, you know, he was a day two draft pick probably, and he could have ended up being one of those that's like a bottom of the first rounder, you know, when it's all said and done after he goes through the draft process. Mm-hmm. And now, like, gosh, just brutal. But, hell, I completely forgot about him until they showed him on the sideline. And it was like, oh, hey, he is there. But Josh Heupel's got him rolling. The good news
Josh Heupel, man, like, he's turned out, I think, to be pretty good. I don't think he gets enough credit for what he's done.
I completely
at Missouri or UCF.
Oh, especially in Missouri. I mean, you know, look what Derek Dooley did to that offense. But I forgot that he was a national championship quarterback. Like, I remember the Jason White and them getting their ass kicked by – who was it that beat him? Was it Miami that beat
USC.
Him? Yeah, it was like 42-7. I forgot that they actually won it with Heupel. And I guess that would have been Stoops' first title?
His only title.
Wow. He only won one title?
Mm-hmm. They win a bunch of times. I think they've lost the national championship like three or four times. They lost to Florida in 08. They lost to USC like you're talking about. And that there was one more I think they lost. Plus the times they've been to the playoff here recently.
Yeah. Man, kind of seeing a theme here where Oklahoma, always bridesmaid, never the bride.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But luckily, we're going to start getting some more – games back this weekend where it's like, hey, these are real football teams. And I like the way you phrase it on the Monday Huddle. And folks, if you aren't reading the Monday Huddle, it's essentially Adam Luckett's version of the Monday Morning Quarterback. Each Monday at 10 a.m. you'll find it on KentuckySportsRadio.com. And it was Here Comes the Varsity was the title. And that's what it felt like because, you know, college football, that first weekend, it was really the second weekend, I guess, because Labor Day didn't give us much. But that first big weekend of it was like, oh, this is great. Football's back. And then the following Sunday, we got to watch the pros. And it's like, oh, that's what good football looks like, where it's not just, you know, getting lined up wrong and letting people score 75-yard touchdowns on you. It's good on good. And I think this weekend's going to be the first time we see some good on good. And as we said when the schedule came out, probably the best good on good you'll find is Kentucky at Auburn at noon on the SEC network. The primetime crew, they said, screw you, South Carolina. We're not going to go watch Stephen Garcia's reincarnate play quarterback. we're going to bring Jordan Rodgers, Cole Kublik, and Tom Hart. They'll be down on the plains at Kublik's alma mater for the game, except for I don't believe Hart will be there. I think he's still doing the calling from home.
That was my question. I know I figured Kublik be on the field, but like they did for the Iowa State game when Louisiana beat them, Hart was at home and Golic was home, I would assume.
Mm-hmm.
Rodgers will be at home, and so will Hart. And Rodgers will be on SEC, the morning show, whatever they call
it. Yeah, SEC Nation. And I think that's how they're going to do it all year because in their SEC Nation press release, they just straight up said that Rodgers is going to be doing it from home studio. So it's going to be different. But in that Louisiana game, like it, I didn't really notice it. I couldn't tell anything was really off there with their – even with the chemistry or anything, and that was with a crew who hasn't been working together for a few years.
The only time you notice it is when the game starts, when they go to them and show them not in a booth, mm-hmm. and then at halftime when they come back from halftime and show them they're not in the booth. Other than that, I don't think you really notice it. For me at least, the announcers, just, they just kind of blend in for most of it. For a lot of the game. Like if you're just watching the game and you're really focused on it, you're just, they're in and out, I guess you could say.
I like to in football. You're like, it doesn't, I don't care what announcer it is. I'm watching the game. Damn it.
But like, but you can notice the bad ones. Good ones. You don't like good ones. You don't really notice mm-hmm. the whole time. You notice them at important spots. Whereas I think watching other sports, I think it matters more. Thinking basketball, because action is more nonstop. It's going.
Like Mike Breen saying bang, you know.
And then in baseball, there's so much dead time to fill. Where football, there's dead time to fill, but I don't know. It's kind of like a happy medium.
Ooh, which I need to ask you a question. Are your Cincinnati Reds, are they going to do this?
It's going to be close. They really needed to win tonight. That would have made me feel a lot better about it. They're down one going – they lost. I got a game cast up here.
Wow, but they were winning. They scored early.
They scored two in the first or second, I think. So they lost 3-2 tonight. Tomorrow's going to be a huge game.
Are the Twins any good? Because I know they
end. Yeah, they're pretty good. They're going to make the playoffs.
Oh, man.
I think they might win the division.
I know that folks got their hopes up on Monday because Cincinnati won and everybody else in the wild.
Phillies losing twice today helped. They lost a doubleheader. And then the Cardinals are the other one you have to look out for, and they're up 3-0. They lost last night too. So
it's really bizarre that you're like, yeah, they're going for the wild card. They're just trying to get to 500. Right. It's a bizarre. It's like
the AC in the NBA playoffs.
Yeah, yeah.
Or that last, or that sucky division in the NFL where 8-8.
Like NFC East every year.
Mm-hmm. Or NFC West used to be like 8 years ago. Back when all those – before the Seahawks got good.
Right, back when right.
It was just below.
And, hell, I think the Seahawks, when beast mode happened, they were like a 8-18 right, that year. Yeah, they were real bad, and they surprised the – I forget who that was that he went beast mode on them. But they Saints. Were really bad that year, yeah. But I don't know how we got sidetracked because this isn't baseball time. It's football time. And, Adam Luckett, I want to play a game with you. Because we've talked a lot about Auburn and Kentucky, and this is just a way to talk about it differently to kind of get the juices flow, get the hamster wheels turning, and we can kind of go wherever we want from there. But it's a little game that I created, never been done before, and it's brought to our friends at MyBookie. I'm sure all of y'all know right now, this is the best sports time ever. Pretty much every day you can make a meaningful wager, and you can do it with MyBookie. Whether you're betting on Anthony Davis to beat the Nuggets with a 3 at the buzzer, or betting for the Celtics to come back against the Miami Heat, and the, I don't know, 50 football games that are happening this weekend, MyBookie is the place to do it. Whether you've been betting for years or you're ready to play for the first time, MyBookie is your best bet. This season, with the biggest online selection of bets and props, they've made it simple to win and easy to withdraw your cash. Right now, they've got a 100K super contest for only a $10 entry, and they're giving away $5,000 in cash prizes every 4 weeks. You'd be crazy not to invest your knowledge with that kind of potential return on your investment. $10 to win thousands. sign me up. You can sign up at MyBookie. Just use the promo code PERSONNEL. Yes, that's as in 11 PERSONNEL. PERSONNEL. Use the promo code PERSONNEL to claim your 100% deposit match all the way up to $1,000. So if you put in $100, they'll give you another $100 to jumpstart your bankroll and win some cash betting college football this season. That's MyBookie. Use the promo code PERSONNEL to match your deposit 100%. A crazy deal with MyBookie. Now, before we make some college football picks, we're going to play a game of fill in the blank at a market. And I want to start with this. Blank will be the weirdest part about watching Saturday's game.
That's a good one.
Because it's going to be different. Like, not – I know that
– empty stands at these big stadiums that were used to being filled. So, empty stands at Jordan-Hare, that will be weird. It really hasn't hit me yet, but I do think it'll hit me for some of these SEC games. Like, at 3:30 when LSU plays Mississippi State, Mike Leach runs out and there's all these empty stands, that will be weird.
Yeah. Like, and especially in college where, like, maybe I've romanticized it, but, like, the notion of, like, the pageantry and the bands and the dancers and, like, it just – it feels like there's a lot of tradition. And you're not going to have that. Like, you don't have the War Eagle at Auburn. That's just weird. But the weirdest part for me is not being at the game. This will be the first – game. I didn't go to last year's game at Mississippi State, which was a great decision. But I can't really count skipping a Mississippi State game in Starkville. But I've only missed a handful of games in 10 years. I mean, I've been doing this for at least five. So, like, just not being at the game is going to be weird to the point like it that I've trained my brain to, like, be press box working. I'm really worried about watching from the couch and, like, my mental state through this, and like now I get to scream at the television and just piss off my wife.
That was going to be the road trip this year for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Going to Auburn. That stinks.
Mm-hmm.
This won't really hit you, I guess, until the first home game, but kind of my runner up answer here, the tailgating, not being able to tailgate.
Yeah.
Not being able to plan your whole Saturday around that. When you've been doing it, a lot of people their whole life. It's
now,
be weird.
Have you come up with an alternative for? No. Are you gonna have like a tailgate of sorts at home? To kind of in lieu of no tailgating.
For me, it's just gonna be I'm gonna watch more games. So I got the 3 TV set up in the basement. So I'm just gonna hang out in my lair and consume everything I can.
Fair enough.
Because there is a part, like, going to the tailgates, it's fun. It's awesome. It's one of my favorite things to do all year. And I have a lot of fun doing that. But there's also – there's a little buyer's remorse with it, too, because there are days you miss or games you miss that you really can't catch up on because by the time you get back, you're moving on to the next week. And college football happens so damn fast that really it's on – you know, it's 12-hour Saturday, and boom, we're moving to the next week. And so there is that part of it. But it's also – like, this year is also going to be, like, a case study for me where I get to see everything, and then how much do I miss the tailgate portion of it.
Well, and I think you're going to find out that you miss it more than you think once you get some stinky noon slates, you know, like, or you get some postponements, you get some weird matchups. Because I think the – you're right. It's not going to hit as much because it's a road game. But going to the catwalk, seeing all the players, like – that really gets the juices flowing. And then I would typically – I'd put my stuff down upstairs, and then I'd come hang out at our unofficial KRC 11 PERSONNEL tailgate down by gate 10 and usually, you know, talk a little trash, kind of just get in game mode.
Right.
Yeah, and then I typically have like 30 minutes before the game where I just don't talk to anybody. It's like – it's kind of like you couldn't – when I was in high school, you couldn't talk to our head coach. He would just like kind of walk around the hallways, just muttering to himself. And he would kind of be like pointing around, like thinking things through his head. He's just going through scenarios of what's going to happen in this game. It's about 30 minutes for the game. I just got to shut everything off and kind of power down because it's going to be amped all the way up. And I don't, man, being in that routine, it's going to, it, not having that's going to be weird. Watching it with my son, like watching an important sporting event with my son, that's a whole different ball game. So it's going to be weird. And I hope that you folks out there have found some creative ways to still get the juices flowing. If you do, please tweet them into us, share them with us, because we're going to need help too. So right. Tweet them into us at RouschKSR, at Adam Luck at KSR. And, you know, maybe we'll share some of them on the show, because I think everybody's going to need some help this football season getting back into the right frame of mind.
None of that Kroger-filled press box popcorn whenever you want it, Mr. Roush.
No, none of the cheap coffee. Just keep going back to – I'm about four a game, give or take. And then maybe throw in a Coke Zero too. Coke Zero, great product. Absolute great product. Okay. This one – this fill in the blank, Adam Luckett. Just hear out the entire sentence. UK's blank versus Auburn's blank will be the greatest position battle. UK's blank versus Auburn's blank will be the greatest position battle.
Auburn's receivers versus UK's secondary.
You kind of read my mind there.
Specifically, Kelvin Joseph versus Seth Williams.
Seth Williams, if you don't know him, he's a big boy, standing at 6'3", number 18 in your programs. He's their kind of big go-to guy.
6'3", 211 pounds, junior, former top, like 200, 250 recruit. Led them in receiving last year. Potential all-SEC guy. Probably be three and done. Probably be in the draft after this season. He's their guy on offense.
Yes. And the other guy who I think – is going to play, I mean, like, he's obviously going to play a big role, and that's Schwartz, which when I think of Schwartz, what's the first Schwartz that comes to your mind when you hear the word Schwartz?
Wasn't that like a Charlie Brown character, or the guy who wrote Charlie Brown or something?
Yes. That was Schultz, Charles Schultz. Okay. Yeah. So I should, like – typically, it would be right to Spaceballs with Schwartz. Your Schwartz is as big as mine, but it's actually a Christmas story because Schwartz is one of his buddies. And I think Schwartz is the kid who puts his tongue on the pole. But this Schwartz, much different. He's their kind of slot scat back type. Jet sweep kind of deal.
He's kind of a 2-2 Atwell kind of mold where he's only going – now, I think 2-2's more polished as a receiver. This guy's only going to touch the ball 3, 4, 5 times probably. But every time he touches it, he's dangerous. Like you said, they'll run him on a ton of motions and stuff. They'll probably do it a couple times, hope you fall asleep, and then hit you with a jet sweep or hit you with an end around. Or they'll, you know, just run verticals with him. So he's a guy you always got to be cautious and know where he is. They'll line him up in different places. He has world-class speed. He was the high school – like player of the year in track and field, athlete of the year, track and field, senior year of high school. Like if he went down that road, I think he could have potentially been an Olympic kind of guy. So world class.
Kind of like Trenton Holiday. Trenton Holiday, he was a little twerp though. He was only like 5'8", 5'9", but
yeah, this guy's a little bigger.
He's listed at 6 foot. But I just, every time LSU played that year, and I guess it was the 07 year, and he hung around for a while, but they would always show him running, like doing hurdles, because he even ran track for LSU still while he was playing football for him. But what I'm curious, especially in Schwartz's case, because you mentioned Joseph and Williams, they're probably locked up the entire time. But I'm curious, when he's in the slot, who's going to be lined up over him? Because when we got our depth chart, Stoops was kind of talking out of both sides of his mouth, because on the coach's show, he said Devontae Robinson's not playing, but on the depth chart, he's number one at nickelback ahead of Vito Tisdale, who Stoops also said Vito was dealing with some things. And it kind of – he's like, yeah, but he'll be back this week, though. So it kind of led a an astute individual would probably say, well, it sounds like he was probably in contact tracing for COVID. If he was just out for a couple of weeks and now he's back. So I don't know what they're going to throw out there at nickel. And I think that's pretty purposeful how little heat they've kind of dove into individuals' responsibilities in the secondary throughout this preseason.
Nickel's going to be a spot you're going to need a lot, because Auburn, from where I'm sitting, I think they're going to live in pretty much 11 personnel for the most part. They might get a little funky, get two running backs, two tight ends out there at some times. But when you look at the strength of Auburn's team and you consider Chad Morris is calling plays, you would figure, it's going to be a lot of spread formations. So, and they're going to try to take advantage of those receivers and that quarterback they have. But, I mean, we'll see how it shakes out. They got a lot of candidates. I think Kentucky does to play that nickel spot. We've heard Echols has been tinkering there in the past. If Robinson and Tisdale had issues, that would seem like the guy. And then they could just put Dort in. So then you got Echols, Dort,
right,
and Joseph
right.
on the field at the same time, and you don't have to mess with the safeties.
And those might be your
– and Asian are mostly where they're at.
That might be your best three corners too. Right. So, like, why not have especially him on the field?
Especially a guy like Schwartz, if that's the guy you're lining up with a lot in the slot. Putting a guy with, some man cover skills on him in Echols, I think that would make some sense.
And Echols is a good tackler too, because know that
– that's the way you needed that spot. You're right.
The way that kind of Gus Malzahn's offense works is, I think of it as a lot of sideline to sideline. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think of it as a lot of misdirection, sideline to sideline, and trying to just use space to your advantage.
So wing T principles offense. What I mean by that is a lot of eye candy, a lot of jet motions. So that's when this receiver runs straight down the line, orbit motions where they make a loop.
Mm-hmm.
They'll get in unbalanced formations. They'll do that little muddle huddle where to kind of trick you, where they huddle real close, 2 yards by the ball. If they get a successful play, they're going into tempo. They're going mm-hmm. fast. So yeah, it's a lot. And but then off the passing game with Malzahn, it's always been kind of a rinky-dink passing game. That's what I mean when I say Malzahn has a rinky-dink offense. The pass concepts are pretty dinosaur. It's a lot of play action, deep shots. It's not – they don't get the tight end involved in the passing game in the past. And I think that's why Nick struggled a little bit, because he's more of RPO, kind of dink it, spread the field, dink and dunk, air raid type schemes is what he played in high school and what he probably does best at. And they were asking him to run around and throw the ball deep a lot, which that was the rap coming to Mount High School, was deep ball is something he struggles with. And I think you saw that play out for them a little bit last year. But with Morris coming in, it's more of – RPO base. Now it's still up tempo. Malzahn and Morris are two guys, I think, in college football that really cashed in on the tempo when that started. Yeah. Malzahn was the first one really in the SEC. Morris did it at Clemson. But as people have adjusted to that and the rules have been tinkered, like the substitution rule, stuff like that, you've really seen those two guys. I think their offense has come back down to earth. I think people have kind of figured it out. Malzahn is. He's gone back and forth, play calling, not play calling, but his offense kind of stays the same. We'll see if it changes at all with Morris. But playing Auburn, it's always about stopping the run. If you can stop the run, you're going to be in a pretty good spot. But we don't know. Maybe this is the year when he has a five-star quarterback that he's willing to change.
Yeah, and it's also, too, on what scale do you believe in Bo Nix? I became a believer immediately when he made one throw against Oregon, but
yeah,
I'm clearly that's just oh my gosh, he made one big play. I don't know if he's a real deal. Freddie's pretty bullish on him. Lockett, are you bullish on him?
I like Nix. When you watch him, you see some special stuff. He's got some moxie. You can see stuff with him. He can run around, make some throws. I think he's got accuracy. Which accuracy travels, especially in the short to intermediate areas. I just don't like the offense. Now we'll see what it looks like on Saturday. But he had some bad moments last year, but he also had some good moments. Of course, he turned it on Oregon in that opener, went in the fourth quarter. They beat Alabama, but we'll see. I mean, his numbers were not good last year. He was under 7 yards per attempt, 57% completions. He only ran for 300 and change. So he kind of held them back last year at the quarterback position, but I don't think that was all his fault. think the pieces are there for him to succeed this year, but we'll see. We'll see what they do.
Well, that leads me to my next fill in the blank. If blank plays great, Kentucky loses.
I would say if Auburn's defensive line plays great, that would kind of make it a stalemate with Kentucky's offensive line, and then Kentucky loses. The way Kentucky wins this game is they take advantage of the biggest, I think, mismatch in the ballgame, and that's Kentucky's O-line against that front four of Auburn, a rebuilt front four.
It's as Wayne and Young said, we're going to make them earn every single blade of grass, which is just what a badass. Like, that quote right there, just punch him in the mouth with that one. My goodness, that is incredible. I love it.
Auburn last year, I had this in the Monday huddle. You read this stat if you haven't already. Of course, Derrick Brown and Marlon Davidson were both five-star recruits, and they both play right away, and they both end up being top 50 picks in the NFL draft. And so that's two gaping holes that they lost. I'm pulling it up right now what it was. But that's what they're facing. Like, it's a total rebuild. These guys were the heart and soul of their defense in a lot of ways last year. So let's see if I can find it here. Great radio, I know.
Well, I mean, but, like, that's – it's easier said than done. And I know if you look at the just overall talent Auburn's recruited well. They've got twice as many four stars as Kentucky over the same amount of time. But the four stars, they ain't been playing, you know. Like, you gotta have a little bit of experience. And I believe they lost 6 of 8, something like that.
I got it right here. Marlon Davidson and Derrick Brown. Now, these are two guys that are playing pretty much interior defensive line in the NFL. They're both Marlon Brown Davidson, too. They stretched out to end last year, but he was 285 pounds. He was pretty much a tackle playing in.
Derrick Brown had a play for the Panthers. And, like, I mean, he's just blowing dudes up in the NFL. Right. Like, that dude's not missing a beat.
Okay, these guys, 103 tackles. These are two guys on the defensive line. 103 tackles, 13.5 non-sack tackle for loss, 11.5 sacks, 4 forced fumbles. That is an insane amount of just stops, an insane amount of havoc caused. I mean, that's just a lot. And then you look at they lost their top two tacklers. Former UK commit Jeremiah Denson is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then their second leading tackler. So they're two – so really the front of their defense and the back end of the defense, they're having to replace. And you mentioned that recruiting, Nick. I think that's important, but I also think it's important to remember how big of the gap is from the top dogs. So I'm talking Alabama, talking Georgia, talking Clemson, Ohio State. Those guys have like double digits, almost top 100 recruits kind of contributing. When you look at Auburn's depth chart right now, they've got, I think, two starting. It's Bo Nix and Owen Papo. They're well linebacker. So the gap is a lot closer than people realize. And you look at Kentucky, Kentucky's got two top 100 recruits starting, Kelvin Joseph and Landon Young.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, they have more four stars, but I think those guys are closer.
How many are actually playing? Right. You know, like, yeah. I think that matters instead of just on paper what they're kind of we've got this many four stars. Yeah. I know one of them that it was a name from the past, Marco Domeo, former UK.
He got beat out by a redshirt freshman.
Oh, he did get beat out?
Mm-hmm. They got a redshirt freshman starting at corner. That was like their biggest depth chart. He's a high three-star kid from Georgia.
Gotcha. Because I forgot about him until if Phil Steele had him projected as a starter, but Domeo got beat out. Nice. Mm-hmm. For my fill in the blank, mine's if KJ Britt plays great, it's going to be tough. And the reason why I think it's going to be tough is because you can beat up Auburn's offensive line, but you got to be able to get past that second level. And we saw it in that Tennessee game last year where Nigel Warrior and now I can't think of his name. It wasn't Totu.
Daniel Patuli.
Patuli had like seven, like he had 20 tackles. And he made the play of the game at the end. And it was just so frustrating to watch plays that normally would go for, you know, every third one, you're busting for an explosive of 12 yards or more. Like, they're stopping at 4 and 6 yards. And, like, some of them are getting stopped at the line. And that's where it can really make a difference. Kentucky has got to be able to get a body on him, in order to be able to take advantage of the one you talked about in the trenches. Because like you can get that initial push, but you still got to be able to get a body on Britt.
KJ Britt and Owen Papo, they're wood splitters at linebacker. When they hit you, you go backwards. There's no leg drive. There's no forward. Like, you get hit, you go backwards.
I love that phrase. I've never heard wood splitters.
I stole that from Gene Chizik, by the way. He said it on TV, and I was like, that is great. I'm putting that in the bank. That is awesome. So when you play them, and we saw David Reese at Florida wreck Kentucky.
Yeah. And he wasn't there in 18, and you saw what Kentucky was able to run the ball in
18. And a lot of that is that their front held up, and Kentucky could not get to the second level. Like, you look at Auburn's defensive line, they've got a 268-pounder redshirt freshman starting who's going to play their three technique. Like, that guy's going to get targeted. You have to move him on the double teams on inside zone, and you got to climb up to the second level. If they're able to do that consistently, they're going to have a really good day running the ball. If they're not, then KJ Britt and Owen Papo are going to make a lot of tackles, and they're going to be a pain in the butt all afternoon to deal with, and especially on short yardage situations. I think that's really important when you look at those two guys. They can really hurt you, because Kentucky could be efficient all day moving the chains, but then you get in third and twos and they're able to get some stops. That could really sting. So that's something to keep an eye out in this game for those linebackers, number 33 and number 0.
Well, and this brings me to my next point that I think would certainly help the running game. That's Kentucky's if blank plays well. I'm just going to go ahead and say Terry Wilson.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
Yeah, and it's kind of self-explanatory. If Kentucky can pass the ball, it's good for their offense, but their secondary is young. They're replacing a lot of guys. Being able to put them on their heels so they can't creep those safeties up, just to stretch out the defense. Kentucky didn't have that last year, and they were still able to run the ball effectively with the gimmick they had and the kind of workhorse they had out of Lynn Bowden. But you got to be able to make some of these teams pay for selling out on the run. You got to have some play action.
Yeah.
And I just – Terry's saying all the right things.
You got to see it, though. We just have to see it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a part of me that's nervous because – I liked his confidence going into last season, but we were saying we still need to see it then. So it's a recurring thing, but we got to see it from Terry. If he can put up 250 yards, I'll feel really good about the Cats' chances, because he's probably going to run for, you know, 35, 50 more on the ground. Terry Wilson can really turn this game on its head. And as good as Kentucky's defense was last year, statistically, like, Kentucky's offense should be winning them some games this year. And to beat a team like Auburn, your offense needs to go out there and score some points to help your defense. When there's a lot of uncertainties out there, you should be able to take advantage of them with some of the scheme you got drawn up.
With Terry Wilson, I think Kentucky first and second down, they're going to be fine. Like, they'll need him to maybe throw a little couple dink and dunks, but running the ball, they'll be fine. I think – it's really for him, it's third down. Can he get the offense to move the chains, whether with his legs or making throws? I think that's the key for Terry. If he can be good on third downs, really all season, Kentucky's going to be damn good on offense.
And then if you
get to the point where teams are all right, they're just going to be like, all right, okay, the hell with it. We're putting eight. We're manning up on the outside. And then that's when the big play opportunities come. That's when you can sneak a tight end out up the seam. Mm-hmm. On a play action, and that's when, you know, you can have those big pass plays. But in
the meantime, AJ Rose leaking out, you know, right? Like, yeah,
yeah. But in the meantime, I think it's going to be important. Really, it's the third and mediums to me. Can you get those third and sevens, third and six? Can he find a way to convert those? Because a lot of times, it's just the quarterback converting those. It's not anything else. It's the quarterback making a play.
Yeah, and I think throwing on first down is important too. To, like, just get him in a rhythm. Like, I think we're going to see a lot of just quick little hitches and little bubble screens just to, like, it's like sending a shooter in a slump to the free throw line. Like, there needs to be some sort of just throwing and catching out there just to get him going, because there's going to be some rust. He talked at length today about how he's just not thinking about the emotions, just thinking about the game plan. But, like, a lot of this comes down to ultimately, like, once Eddie Grant's phrase, once the bullets are flying, how are you going to react? And get him a hit early.
Right. I would almost run QB counter, QB power first play just to get it done with.
Yeah.
I would tell him, you run two hands over the ball like you're a grade school fullback, but we want 2 yards and I want you to get hit. That's all we're looking for in this play. Just to get it out. I would just do it just to get it out of the way.
Yeah. And it's also, do you remember the first time you went into a varsity football game?
Yeah.
I remember running onto the field and the lights felt so bright.
Right. Thought you were playing in the Coliseum.
My God.
Yeah.
But, like, I went in at defensive end, so I think within the – right away, like, you're getting hit. You're getting popped in the mouth. And then it's like, okay, like, this is normal again. Like, and it's so hard to – like, I can't even imagine what it's like at that level where you're playing in stadiums that big. But I do think that, like, there might be something to – Terry's mentally, like, I'm sure he's not going to this sort of level. We're really putting our psychoanalysis hat on, but, like, I think there is a kind of gratefulness in when he shows up there and, like, who cares if it's only 17,000 students? Like, oh my God, thank God we're just playing this game of football. And I think you're going to get a lot of that from the old heads on this Kentucky football team. And, I want it to pay dividends. I really do, because I'm excited for this football team. And I think it's important that they punch Auburn in the mouth first to really, really set the tone in a game that's going to probably be defined by physicality.
Let's repeat that question again. I think it's my turn.
Oh, Kentucky wins if blank plays well.
Kentucky wins if Kentucky's run defense plays well.
Stop the run.
If they're able to stop the run – get Auburn in obvious passing situations, a pass rush against an unproven offensive line with two brand new tackles, going against a pass defense that figures to be one of the best in the country. I think if you're able to do that, I think Kentucky's going to have a lot of success on defense. They're going to be able to win the game in a lot of ways if they're able to stop the run.
There's one thing you said earlier that I did want to kind of revisit that it always worries me with tempo teams, because Kentucky has strength in numbers on the defensive line. And yes. if you get rolling tempo, like, you lose that strength because you can't sub quick enough.
Well, you got the old hammy drill.
I forgot about that. Oh, we're going to see a lot of that. Quentin Bohanna go down. Oh, bully, get me.
I'm just not saying, but Kentucky has done that. You know, they've had interesting times where they would need the medical staff to run out on the field.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, by the way, if you complain about that,
like, it's get out of here. Yeah.
I don't want to hear it. I just don't want to hear it.
I also like that somebody asked on Stoops's call-in show if they have any sort of package where they put Bully and Bohanna in at the same time, and he said no, but you have to. But, like, just imagining both of those dudes line up in the A gaps, holy shit!
Yeah,
goodness gracious!
Yeah.
Oh, so, but to your point about Kentucky's run defense, it's something we haven't talked about much at all, but it's. You can't have some real bad MAs when you're subbing out Davis or Square for Bembry or Casey or Derek Jackson.
Yeah.
You can't. You just can't. Because Brad White, like, the thing that I like about Brad White is he's pretty nuanced in the way that he talks about players. And with those three guys, he always makes sure he mentions Jackson. But – like, he's like, you know, obviously they're not a finished product, but we feel confident when they're in the game that they'll be sufficient. Mm-hmm. And basically how I read that is I don't think they're going to have times where Square and Davis are both out. I think you're only subbing one guy in and out for a few plays and then, you know, flipping from there because those dudes weren't playing that position last year. And it's going to be coming at them fast. and you hope that they don't fall for those shining lures, the flashing lights that Malzahn's going to throw at them in that offense.
Kentucky's defense has been good at a lot of things, but the last 2 years they've ranked 10th and 12th in yards per carry allowed. They do give up some stuff in the run game. And so I think we've heard Brad White talking about getting more aggressive, getting more playmaking out of the defensive line spot. I think that's part of the reason Josh Pascal has slid down is they want more. And a lot of reason those numbers are like that is because they just don't get the havoc plays. They don't get the run stuffs. They don't get the tackles for loss.
Right.
From the guys up front, I think that's what they're looking for more. If you get more of that, they should be able to capitalize. And I look at Auburn. Rebuilt offensive line. They have four running backs. They're really just throwing them all at the wall. They don't really know who they're going to go with. After having every offense he ever had have a 1,000-yard rusher, Malzahn 2 years in a row has not had that. And so this is year three. They don't really know who they're going to go with. And so on paper, this doesn't look like it's going to be one of the better run offenses in the SEC. So for Kentucky, it's the kind of a team you need to stop. Like, you need to stop the run. If you're able to stop the run, you're going to be in really good shape.
Force Bo next to beat you.
Right.
So.
Well, then you're playing the strength of your defense, I think, too, if you're able to do that. I think the pass rush, that you consider Boogie Watson's probably going to be one of the better pass rush guys in the SEC.
Mm-hmm.
You got a secondary who, by all accounts, is really good with a ton of returning production, and you're adding two potential NFL players in Devontae Robinson, if he's healthy, and Kelvin Joseph. So,
bring it on.
Good things should happen if you're able to get them in predictable passing situations, you would think.
Yeah, especially with that defensive line, because I think Boogie's numbers are going to be a lot better because you're just getting a little bit more natural push. It was kind of like, he was able to pick up a lot of scraps as a sophomore, just of guys going away from Josh Allen, you know. So,
I think the jack position is big for Boogie too. If they're able to have two guys really kind of screaming off the edge, it just makes things so much difficult.
Man, Stoops loves J.J. Weaver. Yeah. He really does. Like, every time J.J. Weaver comes up, he's like, that guy ain't going to be around very long. Right. So,
you have Pascal on the interior. And I think they need to find one more interior guy. Who's going to be that other guy? Because Calvin Taylor was that guy last year.
Yeah. Obviously, they lost maybe big snack, Phil Hoskins.
Yep. Hoskins in a limited role, he showed that in 2018.
Yeah.
He showed really high-level pass interior pass rush.
Okay, and that leads me to the BBN doesn't really know blank, but they will after Saturday.
BBN doesn't really know blank. This is a good one.
Mm-hmm. But they're going to get to know him.
It's obviously Saturday. Like, the answer you want to give is DeMarcus Harris, right?
I'm itching for it. Even though he was second on that depth chart, I'm really hoping he gets a big play on Saturday, because really that's what it comes down to.
J.J. Weaver's a good one.
Yeah, that is. And especially because even when we saw him, like, he was just like this project kind of.
Right.
You know, you it's like a – he's going to be good in years. Well, I think he could be just good right away.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a good one. I like JJ.
Yeah, that's probably what I would go with. I think Weaver, at least what I had in coming out of high school, was more – I think he could have been more impactful as a run defender. I think what I've seen from him more – I think he had a ways to go in the pass game, but I think as a run defender, taking on blocks, shedding blocks, and really being kind of a force player right there at the line of scrimmage, I think that's where he could maybe make a big factor early.
Man, so how did you like fill in the blank?
That was good. We'll have to do that.
Yeah, maybe that's a recurring segment. Fill in the blank, brought to you by MyBookie. Use code PERSONNEL. You get 100% of your deposit matched at mybookie.ag. Look, I don't feel like we need to make like actual predictions as of yet. Let's just go to the college football site where you can – put a little bit of coin over at my bookie on some of these teams. And I'm wondering, like, it, because you fell asleep watching this team. Are we still fading Syracuse?
I'm still riding it.
They're 8-point dogs against Georgia Tech, who, I mean, you know, Georgia Tech, they still feel like they're a fun team to bet on, whereas like Syracuse is the opposite. So I still think you probably ride with the, you know, the Ramblin' Wreck.
Ultimately, the problem in Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh has no explosiveness in their offense. So, like, when you looked at Pittsburgh last year, Kenny Pickett threw, like, 600 passes, and he averaged, like, 6.6 yards per attempt, which is bad. When you throw that many passes, and you're just dinking dunking, and they couldn't really run – they can't run the ball either. So, it was a lot of just slow, methodical drives and then poop down your leg in the red zone for Pitt in that game.
Yeah.
Well, when you look at Georgia Tech,
which, by the way, Pitt is a 3-point favorite against Louisville, which is just hilarious.
When you look at Georgia Tech, I think they have a little bit more explosiveness. So if they were to cash in on that explosiveness, I think they should have a good shot. Now, this will be the worst defense Syracuse has played, but they've looked pretty much lifeless on offense. 8's a weird number, too.
Yeah, I would buy a point just to feel better about it, but that's still a lot. A point and a half, you're not really getting much value out of it when you do that.
Yeah, imagine telling somebody Georgia Tech would be more than a touchdown favorite in a conference game this year, just like a month ago. ACC, though.
There's one line that is interesting to me, Luckett, and that's the game going on at the same time as Kentucky. This is in the varsity, Florida at Ole Miss, and the Gators they open at 12.5. It's now up to 14.5. And I really like that half point because I feel like that's asking a lot out of Florida to win by more than 2 touchdowns. I know that that just feels like a big number for an opening game. Even though Florida's bringing a ton back, that's a big number to go on the road in the SEC to start your season.
One of these double-digit dogs, you look at Georgia, Arkansas, Bama, Missouri, Florida, Ole Miss, LSU, Mississippi State. One of these teams is going to cover and make it a game there for a little bit. So I think it really, if you pick them from those four.
It's got to be the Egg Bowl, right? You got to go with one of the Egg Bowl teams.
Yeah. You would think it'd be one of them.
And I really want there's a lot of reasons why I want Kentucky to win, but we're going to enjoy Mike Leach at Death Valley so much more if it's after a Kentucky win, because what's that going to be? Like, that is – I'm just –
on both sides, yeah.
It is going to be such a mystery, and that's a really big number too. And I feel like you just got to bet both dogs and pray. I think you just got to roll the dice with Egg Bowl. I know we're partial to it, but like, those are some big numbers, and I can't see both of those teams showing up. I just can't.
Look at that total 57. Mississippi State's defense stunk when Willie Gay wasn't out there last year.
Mm-hmm.
LSU's got talent. They should be able to score some points. And Mississippi State's got a good quarter. I mean, Costello's a good quarterback. So you figure they can. That's just, the over seems like one I would. That's one to just catch my eye, I think.
Oh, okay. I like that. That's a 30 points apiece. They can easily hit that.
Yeah, really, you're just looking for if LSU could get to 38. They get to 38, then you just need 20 for Mississippi. You just need 3 touchdowns for Mississippi State. Those are the check marks. And I think they can both get that, yeah.
They're going to get at least a couple of big plays.
Yeah. LSU's tight end. Bordron's comparing him to Calvin Johnson, Eric Gilbert.
Yeah, I've heard about this
guy. He's a top 10 recruit. Like, this guy, like, we're probably going to look at him and be like, this dude had no business playing college football like we did with Eric Stingley last year. By all accounts, this dude is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you add that in and the other talent they have. I mean, they've got receivers waiting in the wings. It's just going to be Ken Brennan getting on the football.
Right. Which, by the way, I know I don't know if you went back and watched it after I talked to you about it, but the Coach O 60 Minutes, like, Coach O is just a gem. You know, he is the easiest 60 Minutes puff piece story because, like, he really – it's pretty remarkable that he was just, like, this, you know, super eager little kid who wanted to grow up and coach LSU, and now he's there. But it was great because they went to his mom, and Coach O's mom is exactly how you would think she is.
Like, right.
Just Cajun to the core, right. You know. They've got to have some seafood apple gumbo fall before
far
it starts.
From the tree.
Oh no, not at all. But if you haven't watched that, I highly recommend it.
In the other two SEC games, Nick.
Uh huh.
The Bama line early came out at like 22, I think. 20.
Right.
Like that. That was. It's up to 28 now. Now it's a stay away from me. But at 20-21, that was like a lock. And now that thing has gotten crazy.
Especially once, like Mizzou said, they got a dozen people out for COVID.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to get.
And one of my principles for last year was Georgia unders, obviously, because their defense was filthy, and then their offense really couldn't do anything. And so I look at this matchup, like Arkansas scoring against that group, it's going to be a damn accomplishment.
Good job. Nice try, Felipe Franks.
And so 52, Georgia's breaking in a new quarterback. They're breaking in two new running backs, new O-line, some new receivers. So there's going to be some tinkering, I think, with their offense. That game feels like 34-7, something like that. And the total's at 52. That feels like a pretty comfortable under for me. That's one of my more favorite plays on the card. And then I look at South Carolina, Tennessee. Huge game, I think, for both programs. More importantly, South Carolina. I looked at the depth charts today for both. I see two really good defenses, and then I see offenses with skill talent that are just like, you know, and then two quarterbacks, you're just like, Tennessee, obviously, I think it has a little more skill talent. It just feels like an under. Like, it's 44. I only see one team getting to 20 points, if that. That's a low number, but it just – both those defenses should be pretty good. Two defensive head coaches – it just screams under to me.
And you're right, too, especially like I'm looking at Tennessee's receivers, and they're just – none's really jumping out.
Right.
Those guys last year, Jaquez Callaway – or Marquez Callaway, and who was the other one?
Juwan Jennings.
Yeah, like those dudes – those were some bad dudes. But now they're breaking in all these receivers are new. Those running backs, Tyson Chandler, never did anything for me.
And in this game, all it's going to take is one turnover early by either quarterback. And then the head coach is like, three and out punt. We'll score off a short field.
Who hates their quarterback more, Jeremy Pruitt or Will Muschamp?
Pruitt right now. Muschamp ain't seen this guy yet. Pruitt right now.
Which, yeah, I made the reference earlier, and Luckett pointed this out to me. The quarterback at Colorado State, he looks just like Stephen Garcia.
He does.
Colorado State transfer for South Carolina. He's playing over Helinski. It's very funny. I highly recommend you check that out.
The guy's like 30 years old. It's like a 12th-year senior.
So Kentucky, they're 7.5-point dogs. It opened at a couple different spots, but 7.5 feels like the right number. Are you going to play Cats plus 7.5?
The only thing I have in this game is when I look at the teams, I think it's a good matchup for Kentucky. I think they match up well in a lot of spots. I think Auburn's strengths kind of go with Kentucky's strengths. And then I think Kentucky has a big advantage, especially on offensive line going up against them. And then I think defensive line, they could take advantage of an Auburn offensive line that's got a lot of new pieces. Gus Malzahn is saying, we're trying to find the best five, but right now, we don't know if they're at their best positions. We might have to do some shuffling. And that's not really what you want to hear about your offensive line going into the season.
No.
Kentucky's got experience and depth where they should be able to take advantage of an offensive line that's kind of struggling right there. So when you consider all that, I think Kentucky matches it well. My only concern about this game is just that it's the first game and weird stuff happens in the first game.
Right.
Auburn is used to playing in games like this. Kentucky is not right off the bat. Malzahn has gotten – I think Auburn's gotten kind of outplayed the last 2 years in their opening games, Washington and Oregon. They somehow found a way to win both. Like, this is just kind of a game. They figure out a way to win. Obviously, I think 7.5, you know, I would lean with Kentucky there. But that's the only thing scaring me in this game. I wish this game was not the first game. I wish it was the second or third. I just don't like how it sets up early. But at the same side, I think – Kentucky had some pieces where they might be able to finish or have an edge on Auburn. Even Malzahn has admitted it, saying Kentucky's an older team. Mm-hmm. They've got a big, strong O-line, or our defensive line is kind of reshuffling. We're reshuffling an offensive line where we're not a veteran team, so we're just going to have to figure it out in the game where Kentucky maybe has more answers ready to go and less shuffling. So that's really the only thing drawing me back is just – that and, like, we have to see it more from Terry. Like, you got to see it. We just haven't seen it in over a year.
And I think if you're a Kentucky fan, like, and you want to feel really good about where the Cats are in the second quarter, it's they've hit an early big play action. They put some points on the board, and they can really lean on that run game because we saw how great that defense is when you can give them some time to breathe a little bit. And that's going to be key against this tempo. So I think it's really important. Like you could say, I mean, you could, there's two things you could say about every game, take care of the ball and get out to a fast start. But I mean, Jesus Christ, how many times have we watched Mark Stoops teams just kind of look like crap in the first half of their first games? Now there's two exceptions. Southern Miss, they go up and blow up the scoreboard in the first half and then blow it. And then Louisiana, whenever Boom Williams scored on the first play at the renovated stadium. But aside from that, Cats
they don't really jump out to 14-0 leads with 2 minutes left in the first quarter.
Is that how long it took, too, to get up to that? But, like, Kentucky's not good at covering against those kind of MAC teams. Mm-hmm. They're just not. But if you can punch first in this game and lean on your run game to kind of help your defense out, like, you know, you're not winning this game by a lot, but I think that's the right trajectory. That's how Stoops wants to win a big, tough football game on the road, is lean on your strengths to win in the trenches. And I ultimately think Kentucky will. I'm confident. I'm hyped. But, man, I'm going to be nervous as hell Saturday morning at Muckett.
Right. I truly do think – I think Kentucky's going to have success all day moving the ball from the 20s to the 20s. So when they get down there, like, can you finish? We've heard in camp they've had some red zone issues. So that's obviously a concern. And then kicker, like, hey, you know, hate to say it, but I think that could be big. Because the worst thing is going to be Kentucky has owned this game maybe until the end of the third quarter, and they're only up, I don't know, 8 or something because they've left some points on the board. And then Auburn kind of storms back with their passing game. They're late. I could definitely see that playing out. That's a concern. I think Kentucky's going to move the ball consistently all game. But finishing drives is just going to be huge.
Man, I'm just
and timely turnovers and timely third down conversions. Like I said earlier, can Kentucky get those third downs? Because I think they're going to be in a lot of third manageables in this game. I really do. It's just going to be cashing in with first downs when you get there.
We're here like it. We did it.
I know.
Oh, man. I'm so happy. New kickoff. I will say
one more thing with this Auburn team. There's definitely like the pendulum swings with Malzahn, good, championship contending.
Bad.
Bad, like mid to low part of the conference.
6-6, 7-5.
And the pendulum is on the bad side.
It's due to swing back the bad way.
And then you look at the roster, like there's some signs there that they got to prove. Like they need Bo Nix to be good and for that passing game to really take a big step forward. If he's not, they could be in trouble. And he's going up against what should be a pretty good pass defense right out of the chute. So we'll know right away with him, I think. And I think we'll probably know early in that game. But we'll see. I mean, first game, like I can't stress it enough. So much weird stuff happens in a first game.
Hell, we've seen it in college football so far. That first weekend, all the special teams debacles.
Just right.
Weird stuff all over the place. So hopefully the ball bounces the Cats away.
Hopefully, yeah, you got an experienced team, so hopefully that's negated a little bit because this ain't these dudes' first rodeo.
Right, right. Time for the Cats to take advantage. I can't wait. I'm so happy. It's game week. It'll be here before you know it. Whew. Hopefully this has helped all of y'all listening out there get closer to kickoff. Noon on the SEC Network. Cats, Tigers. It's a showdown we won't soon forget. In a game, in a season unlike any other. Thank you all for listening to 11 Personnel. We see y'all next week. Cats will be 1-0. Go Cats, go Kroger.